Grade 5, Language Arts, Part 3. Now, we mustn't forget, of course, that a good deal of what is going to transpire in language arts, the art of language, is learning through usage. That means that the children are going to continue to recite poetry. They're now going to have more demanding class plays, and I would suggest that the fifth grade play be a quantum leap in this direction, because their memories certainly are ready for it, and because they should have greater poise and a greater ability to play a role now as they're getting a little bit older. And don't forget everyday discourse. I think that the most persistent and perhaps the most powerful grammar lessons that I gave were the ones that came out of necessity when the children would come up to me and say, can me and Tony go out and play? May Tony and I go out and play? No, that's not good enough. Please say that. May Tony and me go out to play? Try again. May Tony and I go out to play? Yes, you may go out to play. Thank you for your good grammar. But you've got to do that every day, all the time. You can't let your guard down. And of course, the children wait until you're preoccupied and three or four of them are tugging at your sleeve for attention and other needs. And that's when the ungrammatical questions or statements come out. When children get up to speak to deliver a review, correct their grammar. Don't do it cruelly or superciliously, but simply do it as a matter of fact. That's your responsibility. And we touch here also on a very raw nerve to ask the parents to correct the children's grammar at home. Not when they're first graders, not necessarily when they're second graders, but from third grade on, the parents should be doing that. Here again, private Waldorf schools, better educated, a group of parents, we can have some assumptions, presuppositions, perhaps incorrect, about their ability to speak the King's Speech halfway decently. With charter school parents, yes, indeed, some may. For some, English may be a second language or almost as good as a second language because even though they're native born, they may have had such a poor education themselves. So this is tricky. And this is undoubtedly going to be an important pedagogical issue worthy of a conference at some point or other in the private Waldorf school world and certainly in the charter school world, because children cannot speak grammatically on their own. They learn a lot. There are a lot of archetypes in the human being to really help with that, but all of the finer points and the nuances they can only learn by hearing, by doing, and by being corrected again and again until it becomes very much the fiber of their being. We also should expect, if not this year, then certainly next year, that the children start to develop at least two modes of speech. The mode of speech that they have with one another, which, as you will notice, boys and girls alike, starts to become a bit profane. And increasingly profane if you're walking down the hallway and hearing something in your classroom in a seventh or eighth grade. Don't be shocked at anything you hear. And which is also filled with slang and which is usually purposely or unknowingly rampant with bad grammar. So that can't be changed. You can't be in their face constantly. But when they are addressing you, and you'll see how quickly they're able to change. Once they've shaken your hand, or if they're chatting with each other after lunch and you appear and ask a question, they learn they learn that there's a completely different mode of discourse with the teacher. It's a bit like the see and do in German, the two forms of you, that they understand there are different ways of addressing adults. And that's important. That's not a bad thing. They can, you know, they have to become part of teen culture eventually, but they also will have to become part of Western culture as well. Now, what can I say? You as a class teacher not only are correcting their grammar, you have to be correcting your own grammar. How is your grammar? Alas, education nowadays provides us with only the most rudimentary grasp of what good speech really is. And I have seen signs on college campuses written by the university administration, or perhaps by a department, such as the English department, with grammatical and spelling errors on them. So we are living in an age when the decline of standards in speech is so rapid that we can hardly face it. And one can blame, you know, texting and Twitter and all of those things and all of the shortcuts people take. But it's been around much longer than that, certainly since the 60s, when it was felt that we really had to become real and not stand on formality with our speech or anything else. And so it is. But for children to understand the laws of grammar, they have to have a teacher who is a model of good speech. And I certainly have noticed, not just out of my East Coast snootiness, but just as someone who loves the entire United States, that when you go west of the Mississippi, informal speech, and now increasingly formal speech, is so ignorant of the basic laws of grammar. So please do what you can for the children's sake. Steiner tells us, you know, that grammar really allows a child to incarnate in the right way. Particularly the skeletal system is very affected by the way in which children speak. And I don't mean whether their bones have enough calcium, but it's really how responsive, how much of an instrument that skeletal system becomes as the framework for our movement, and our movement which allows us to fulfill our karma, to find our destiny. It's really important that we honor the word, and we honor it in its grammatical sense as well as in its everyday beauty as well. So please, class teachers, you are the central figure in this learning through usage. Now, I'll talk a little bit about recitation and play roles as well. When you recite with your students, first of all, fifth grade, we're talking now about 15-minute warm-up times. Maybe now and then on a special day, 20 minutes. But you're not doing all the stuff you used to do. You're not clapping and stamping and rhythmic stick the times tables. Some of you may laugh at my implication that anyone would, but people do. Unless a class teacher is told to stop something that seems to be reasonably effective, they will generally continue doing it until the end of the earth. Thank goodness Steiner made a rule about there being a new verse in grade 5, or we would just keep going with the sun with loving light through university years, who knows. And with this new verse, much changes. The child's entire perspective, the way they look into the world instead of passively becoming recipients of the sun's loving light, that makes a difference. So one or two good poems. And now you can work with longer poems. And of course, I'm giving you a lot of material from David Kennedy's wonderful book. You should be finding a lot of your own material. But whatever they speak, it should be clear, well enunciated, and meaningful to them. Those of you who've taken conferences with me in the lower grades know what I'm about to say now. Those of you who haven't, please listen well. When you teach the class a poem, in fifth grade, I would suggest that you do most or all of it by heart. Later on, they can look at it, but only after they've learned it by heart. So you still want to exercise those ever more powerful capacities of memory. So you learn it by heart. Day one, you recite the poem to the class, and they just listen. That's all. They just listen. Day two, you recite it again, and perhaps give them four or five lines to try to recite along with you. And that's it. Day three. Now we're going to move faster also because it's fifth grade. You go as far as those 5 to 10 lines now, let's say, and you work with them on learning it. Now, in grade five, by the end of the week, by the end of any 5-day period, if not sooner, you should be able to step back and listen to your class reciting the poetry. This is critical. This is why there are kids who've done karaoke or sync singing, I should say, sync singing for years, and the teacher is not aware that they haven't memorized much of anything because they sort of move their mouth, but they're depending on everybody else to say it for them. Your eyes have to be open. You have to be walking around the room and really listening. Charles, sharper on those consonants. Joanne, I can't hear you. Louder, please. So as they're reciting, you can go around and do a little commentary and break them up into small groups. Okay, I only want to hear the third row say this. Only the boys. Only the girls. I'd like three people to volunteer to say the first 5 lines, however you do it. So very, very quickly, they're taking a greater responsibility for this. And you are asking the best of them. Good volume, good pronunciation, good enunciation. Put some feeling into it. Have them recite it in a southern drawl. Have them recited in an ersatz British accent or whatever to vary things a little bit. Have them try to say some of it backwards. Go outside and have them bellow it. They'll be learning the story of Demosthenes, who put the stones in his mouth and spoke to the crashing waves on the shore. So they can try that one, or they can speak it very, very low and whisper it. But work with a good poem for a month. One poem learned really well is better than 5 in a little variety show that they have no connection to whatsoever. And above all, after a few days, you stop reciting. Only recite a bit to show them how it's done. But don't be carrying them. You shouldn't have been doing it even in first grade for too long, but certainly in fifth grade. If you're the kind of teacher who can't help but join in with them, forget it. You need to be outside of that. You need to be an objective observer. So all of that goes for the class play as well. If your class play is the right length, it's too long for you to memorize and teach them by heart. So now you work with a script. And I suggest if it's a demanding play, start 12 weeks in advance. Just go over it, read it repeatedly aloud with the class as a group. Some children can come up and try out parts, but they're not yet auditioning. They're just helping the play move forward. And a good way of apportioning parts in the class play, starting even in fourth grade, but certainly in fifth grade, is you should pretty much have an idea as to who is playing what role. But it's good to give the children now a feeling of choice. So what I would do was to say, you know, choose in order three roles that you think you can play well. And then below that, write down as many parts as you can think about casting, and write down the names of classmates whom you think would be good in that role. Well, the first time I did that, it was really, really wonderful. And you see that actually, though the students are often terrible at judging which part they should have, you see how little self-knowledge they have, though they seem so wise in many ways. But they are great in figuring out what their classmates need, because they're still living so unified with one another. These etheric forces are so close and intimate. So you get much better ideas from them about their classmates than about themselves. However, certainly by sixth grade, they've caught on. And what you have in this Roman epoch are the politicians. They're walking around and lobbying each other. Tell Mr. Schwartz you think that I should be Julius Caesar. Tell Mr. Schwartz that I want to be Brutus, that I should be Brutus. So they're now telling one another what to write. It's like these scams that go on in internet surveys. So watch that. But still, I think this is a good way of working with it. And of course, let the students know and let their parents know that final decisions are yours and they are irrevocable. And you must make them irrevocable, even if you've totally screwed up. Because as soon as you waver on that class play, you are opening the door for next year and the year after and so on. You're setting a terrible precedent that you can be persuaded, that you can be won over. Most likely it won't happen this year, but it will definitely happen in grade six, that parents call you up and tell you how upset their children are about the terrible roles you've given them, not only in grade six, but for the previous 5 years as well. So you sort of have to think a bit into the future. Okay, if I give so-and-so the part of the Egyptian princess in grade five, then what am I going to do with her best friend? Because in grade six, I imagine she should. So you really have to be thinking at least 1, even 2 years ahead of the kinds of plays you're going to do and the roles you're going to give the children. And I know you may be groaning right now. It's hard enough to think about the class play you're doing for this year, even a few weeks before you're about to do it. I understand that, but it's good to get the big picture in mind as well. So give the children a good, demanding play. Do not have them co-write it with you if you're writing it. They'll beg to do that. No, not yet. We'll see about that in the upper grades. And in the upper grades, they already know better. They won't ask that anymore. Fifth grade, because they're so exuberant about their writing. But that's good. That's fine. But the class play is too important. Class play should be thought of as mystery dramas, not in the Agatha Christie sense, but in the Rudolf Steiner sense. They are a chance for the children now to put into the realm of deeds, of action, that which they have been learning. And usually you're going to draw on history block material. Absolutely in grade five, to work with the ancient cultures. Here again, out of just kind of getting sick and tired of seeing the same three plays performed again and again and again, some teachers are starting to look further afield. And the musical, which used to be purely the domain of the high school student, has now become pretty much accepted in eighth grade and even seventh grade. It is, like everything else, starting to crawl down And you may have fifth graders asking if they can do a musical, which will have nothing to do with the subject. Or, you know, maybe they'll find something that has some Greek theme or Egyptian theme that's funny and so on. Please, please be very careful about that. There are a lot of perfectly good grade five plays which the children can do and should do as a way of bidding one final farewell to one or another past life. And if you can't find something you like, then try to write something. Even if it's not Shakespearean in nature, the children will never forget it. It will really mean a tremendous amount to them. And when you work on the play, please, please remind the children again and again. They're not doing the play for themselves, it's there for the audience. Speak out. Imagine that you're shouting to be heard 100 feet away. Look at that window at the end of the room. Shout out to that window and beyond it. Get them to speak loudly. Problems with most Waldorf class plays are that the children are swallowing their words, they're speaking too low, and they can't be heard. And it's very, very important. If the play is worth performing, it's probably worth hearing. And you have to act out the parts, and now you have to start bringing something of an astral quality in your direction. You have to go a little bit over the top. Be more uninhibited than you might ordinarily be, in order to give the children a dawning feeling that they can really let go on the stage and find themselves in a completely different persona. Now you want to start doing a little bit of casting, maybe a quarter of it, out of temperament. By eighth grade, the whole play should be out of character and out of temperament for the students. But you can begin that now with those who are a little bit mature. Ask them to do something completely unlike what they have ever done before. I urge you at this grade level that in order to get the play really polished and of high quality, you can't simply rely on the days of the week that you have in school. You can't just be canceling all of the language classes and eurythmy classes and so on in order to have enough time during the school day and the school week. You have to let the parents know in September at the beginning of the year, the date of our class play is right before spring vacation. It's going to be April 10th and April 11th. We are going to be working intensively on our class play for the 3 weeks before that time. Please, dear parents, I'm going to be asking you to bring your child to school after school, or the child will stay after school so we can rehearse at certain days. Other days for lighting rehearsals, I'm going to be asking you to bring your child in at 7 in the evening or something like that. We also will have 2 weekends set aside in which parents will help us creating sets, costumes, and so on. Help us, not do it all for us, because now the children will play a role in all of this as well. And now you have to be very careful during class play rehearsals when you're in school. With each upcoming grade, there are more and more central roles in the plays, and more smaller roles. It's not like everybody's speaking all the time in a chorus. Well, while 2 or 4 kids are again and again going over a very intense and difficult part, what are the other ones doing? Well, in some schools, they're acting like it's summer vacation, and they're kind of disappearing out of the room. Can I use the bathroom? And they come back half an hour later to see if you even noticed they were gone or have returned. I'm hungry. Can I start to eat my lunch now? Or could we bring cards? Could we bring a game? Could we bring our iPods? And so on and so forth. No, You don't want it turning into chaos, because that also is affecting then the kids working on their parts on stage are feeling they're missing something really great. This is what I suggest, that perhaps you do a history block or a botany block before the class play rehearsal block. You give them more work than they can complete during the block. You make the book more full and rich. And then during the play rehearsals, they still have to work on that book. That would be, and it has been for me, a very good solution. It really keeps them focused. It's also good if you can prevail on a couple of parents to come and be your assistants during the days that you're rehearsing the play in school. Perhaps you can show them how to rehearse small scenes so that three or four rehearsals are going on at once in different rooms in different parts of the school. Two led by parents, one led by you. So avail yourself of the parents' help. Generally something easier to do in the independent school setting than in the charter school setting, but you'll always find some parents who have time on their hands and want to help. And that's all the more reason that you want the children to be well-behaved and really disciplined during these rehearsals, or it's just going to leave the parents with a terrible impression of your lack of discipline. And remember that the play is a language arts event, and that everything about it has to do with good speech and right speech, and that the children are really learning how to settle the most dramatic and difficult issues through speech. It's giving them a very profound lesson. And of course, it's also a powerful social experience for them, working with each other and supporting each other. And I would say that every part of it, from beginning to end, should be beautifully and carefully rehearsed, including the curtain call. Not that they go out there and everybody starts to bow in the silliest way possible, but that they know who goes out first, second, third, whether they're all going to hold hands, bow at once, bow separately, wait for you to tell them to bow again or even a third time. All of that needs to be rehearsed, or else the parents' final impression of the play and the students' final impression as well will be that ragged and crazy and perfectly silly bunch of bowing at the end. Make it something that you are in charge of from beginning to end. So, one more session, and we're going to be working with grammar in the last part of language arts.